my happy home to see what I could find out. I left my folk and friends with the aim to clear my mind out.
On the Road to Find Out, Cat Stevens, also known as Yusuf Islam. I want to welcome you to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling on KKRN 88.5 FM. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Unspun tries to unravel the hype and the illusions of corporate media through in-depth interviews with truth-tellers and advocates from around the world. We are now streaming live on the Internet. Go to kkrn.org and click on the Listen button. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and underwriters like yourselves. So don't be shy. Go to kkrn.org, and if you're already there, and then click on the donate button to support our efforts. Unspun is a call-in show. We invite questions and comments from our listeners. Our number in the studio is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. You can also send me an email at unspun@kkrn.org. Today, our guest is Kirk Wiebe, former award-winning retired NSA analyst and whistleblower. After retiring, Kirk joined several of his colleagues to challenge U.S. intelligence community's illegal surveillance and spying on Americans. After spending 4 years in the intelligence arm of the United States Air Force, Kirk Wiebe attended Indiana University, receiving a master's degree in Russian language in 1974. Kirk then headed east to work for the National Security Agency, the NSA. Among his many achievements during his career at NSA, he led a team of analysts that received the National Meritorious Unit Citation from the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. He was awarded the Meritorious Civilian Service Award, the NSA's second highest honor for important work done on foreign strategic weapons systems. After retiring from the NSA in October of 2001, Kirk joined two colleagues in the formation of a small consulting business focused on helping U.S. government agencies with issues involving the analysis of big data, a byproduct of the information age. In 2002, when it was clear NSA was headed down the wrong path, Kirk, along with fellow NSA retirees Bill Binney and Ed Loomis and former senior staffer on the House Permanent Select Subcommittee on Intelligence, Diane Rourke, initiated a Department of Defense Inspector General complaint about mismanagement and the waste of hundreds of millions of dollars at the National Security Agency. Binney, Wiebe, Loomis, and Rourke also attempted to blow the whistle about the NSA's illegal collection of information about innocent U.S. citizens. Despite their efforts, nothing changed and no one was held accountable. Kirk and his colleagues, along with the former NSA executive Thomas Drake, continued to actively advocate for affidavits to lawsuits, the media, and through personal appearances for justice and legislation to rein in the NSA's violations of the U.S. Constitution. Kirk Wiebe, welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling.
Doug, it's great to be with you this morning.
It is a pleasure and an honor, actually, to have you on, because I so respect all the work that you whistleblowers there at the NSA and other places and the CIA have been trying, to get that message out to so many of us. So I thought maybe we could start with your experience at the NSA just prior to your retirement and how it went from being a good, productive, sensible agency to what it is today. Maybe you can give us a quick history of what happened there.
Yeah, it's, for me, I think also for Bill Binney and Ed Loomis and others, a very sad story, because we had been proud employees of that agency and believed in its mission. to detect and unroot evil in whatever form it might take around the world. The digital age, this is kind of important because there's a confluence of issues and personality types that comes together, I think is probably the best way to say it, and a national shameful issue called corruption that all merge at a point in time that triggers a behemoth, a large agency, in fact, an intelligence community, if you will, which has now included law enforcement in terms of the FBI, to go down a path of ravenous data collection with no bounds, no conscience that would otherwise stem from a good reading of the United States Constitution. You know, it's so ironic. We all, as government employees, sign an oath, and you did too, Doug, when you were in the military, to uphold and defend the U.S. Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. It doesn't say just foreign. And I guess I'm old-fashioned enough. I was born in 1945. I'm now 70. I was old-fashioned enough and naive enough to believe that those words really meant something. Otherwise, why was the government making me and others sign such an oath? And I actually took the oath twice, once in the military and once when initially going to work with the National Security Agency. And by the way, no one has ever relieved me of my duties under that oath. Never did I ever sign off of that oath. No one has ever done that. So I take it very seriously, as does Bill Binney, Ed Loomis, and others. But what happened was the digital age descends upon the NSA, but the NSA, because the digital age was not invented by NSA, it actually began outside of NSA. As you know, the history with ARPA, or DARPA, the research arm of the Defense Department, develops the Internet. It really wasn't Al Gore, as much as he'd like to claim credit. and it develops within a governmental context and seen as something very valuable for the exchange of ideas. So mostly science and academic types would use it in its initial experimental stages as an exchange means, an easy way to get data from me to you, for example, without having to go through the United States postal system. It got there quicker. It got there in soft copies, so it was easy to replicate and share with others, albeit on a small scale at that point in time. So this thing sneaks up on NSA. NSA's really not paying attention as they should have. It's the 1990s, mid-90s, I'll say. The world has also changed. The global geopolitical map, if you will, with the demise of the Soviet Union, the Berlin Wall comes down. This causes some dynamics, and NSA scratches its head and said, gee, if we no longer have a Soviet Union, what do we do now? I mean, all those years, Cold War years, it was fixated on Russia. Worried about nuclear exchange, mutually assured destruction, and the like. And so NSA is wondering what it should be doing. The digital age is descending. There are some attacks overseas that kind of get NSA's attention. And there's this guy that shows up named Osama bin Laden on the radar. And there's some time that goes by, and NSA finds Osama bin Laden in communication. But that short-lived capability is destroyed when a certain senator, although there's some debate about whether he actually accidentally leaked this fact. I think he did. Orrin Hatch out of Utah said something in a news exchange with some press present about Osama bin Laden having a satellite phone. And next thing everyone knows, we've lost Osama bin Laden. And you know the fragility of such revelations. So anyway, we scurry around. The attention grows slowly over time. You know the story. And NSA slowly begins to get fixated on him and the little network that's associated with him. All of a sudden, boom, we get 9/11. And while all that was going on, Bill Binney, myself, Ed Loomis, and a handful of programmers and computer scientists, very small number, in a research facility, were desperately trying to, and I don't want to make it sound like this was sweat work. We were interested in it. It was wonderful to go to work. It was a challenge. We were trying to master the three big issues presented by the digital information, the information age, the internet, all of that was moving. If you remember, there was talk that if you look at a calendar year of 12 months, an internet year was 18 months. That means the change in the internet was so great that 12 months calendar was really 18 months in internet time. And that was simply to reflect the upheaval in technology, the change. It was so rapid. New protocols were hitting the internet and so forth. And we were trying to understand how to solve three issues with all of this. One, the volume that it presented. How do you tame that and exploit it so that you get separate the wheat from the chaff? Let's put it that way. Number two was the variety of information represented by all the protocols I just referenced. There were images, there was text, there was sound, there was video, there were pictures, there were all of these things. And of course, now we have chat and tweets and you name it, browsing on the World Wide Web, like Facebook pages, social network kinds of things. We were trying to understand all that, and was any of it valuable? So we had volume, we had variety, and the final V was velocity. It was coming at us quickly. It goes down these fiber optic lines at the speed of light. How do you deal with that? So these were tough issues, but over time we were beginning to have success, and we could actually demonstrate the success. So along comes 9/11, that fateful Tuesday. Gosh, I remember it so well. Boom. Of course, the whole nation focuses on this tragedy. So many lives lost, and NSA even gets evacuated at one point. And I can remember, and it was over Flight 93. They hadn't accounted for that particular flight, the one that crashed in Pennsylvania. And there was fear that it was headed towards Washington, D.C. As you know, it flew out of Boston. It made a left, or Newark, one of those two. And it made a left-hand turn, turned south, and there was where it was headed for the Capitol, the White House, who knew, somewhere in the vicinity. And it could have been NSA as well, which is only 20 miles or 25 miles northeast of D.C. So we were all told to leave the building except for essential personnel. Well, that means most of us got out of the building, but you know, when I remember that day, it was bright, sunshiny, clear blue sky, no clouds. Thousands of NSAers are standing out in the parking lot within an eighth of a mile or less of NSA. I mean, we certainly weren't protected, so it wasn't much of an exercise to keep us safe. People just didn't know what else to do. Anyway, these are memories I'm going over with you. So that's the situation, and what the heck do we do now? Well, we immediately said, to the director of NSA and others that were trying to respond, throw the prototype we had just developed that can sip intelligently from all of this data. It's not anywhere near the scale needed, but if you produced a few of these quickly and got them out, we'd certainly do a lot better. In fact, I have to tell you, Doug, the crime is we offered to put this capability at operational sites at NSA on the issue of terrorism a full 9 months before 9/11. And the authorities that were in existence at the time did not want to do it because the agency, mainly under the direction of then General Michael V. Hayden, who can still be seen today making the television rounds in defense of mass surveillance, was the director at the time. And he, even though his deputy, William Black, came down and saw what we had and how effective it could be. In fact, Black said to us, "My God, you guys have made huge breakthroughs. Where have you been? Why are you being so shy about it?" Well, we weren't. We were being resisted by other people who had other agendas and other solutions in mind. And they convinced Mike Hayden to forget what our nice little prototype could do and to go down a path that we all now have seen. And that is, why collect all this data when you can go buy it? Buy it from telephone companies, internet companies, this kind of thing. So they went down that path and under a program called Trailblazer. But the lessons we had learned about variety, velocity, and volume were still applicable no matter how you got the data. And they ignored our lesson. They ignored us totally. They didn't include any of us. It's almost like they viewed us as the enemy. Hayden wanted to go spend big dollars, billions of dollars, convince Congress he needed it. After 9/11, it put everybody back on their heels. Congress was only too happy to throw money at the problem like it typically does. And there was no true disciplined engineering review of what had gone wrong, what were the good things NSA was doing that could have been thrown into the fight. So the little project we had called Thin Thread and some connect the dots technology connected to it was ignored in this context. And it's a crying shame because it's a lesson that's never been learned by government in not how to acquire capability, which is all governed by law under the Federal Acquisition Regulation, which says you have to buy things and implement capabilities based on facts, not emotions, not desires to throw money at things. But that's what they did, and they got a bunch of corporations involved, all the big names like Harris Corporation and General Dynamics and Northrop Grumman and Boeing and SAIC, you name it. They were all involved and only too happy to tell the director, sure, we'll take the public's money and try to solve NSA's problem, only to find out in 2005, after we left it in 2001, that Trailblazer was declared a complete an absolute failure. And so that period while we were gone and had left NSA, 2001 through 2005, the agency suffered its largest failure in the history of the organization. And just imagine the lost intelligence while NSA flummoxed around with business trying to solve those three velocity, volume, variety issues. And failed. And so they have all sat back as a result of that now
Let me interrupt you, Kirk, and remind our listeners you're listening to Unspun and Experimented Truth Telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today, Kirk Wiebe, NSA whistleblower and truth teller. We're discussing NSA overreach and illegal spying around the world. Our call-in number is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. We invite your questions and comments. Well, let's move ahead a little bit, and I actually have a little clip. I find Michael Hayden, General Michael Hayden, now retired, to be an interesting figure because he's been central to so many bad decisions, and his attitude, I actually have a little clip from him. But we see Hayden and James Clapper and General Keith Alexander. All of them are generals and products of the Pentagon, by the way. And they've lied to Congress, and they've blocked oversight capabilities of the Congress. And I just find it interesting that a handful of people can actually subvert our intelligence community. But I thought it was interesting because Hayden, this is a clip, I think, from 2007, General Michael Hayden and his perversion of the Constitution. So I want to play this, and then we'll come back to you for your thoughts on this.
Terrific.
Okay, here's the clip.
My understanding is that the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution specifies that you must have probable cause to be able to do a search that does not violate an American's right against unlawful searches and seizures.
Fourth Amendment actually protects all of us against unreasonable search and seizure.
But the measure is probable cause, I believe.
The amendment says unreasonable search and seizure.
But does it not say probable?
No.
The court standard, the legal standard,
search and seizure.
The legal standard is probable cause.
Just to be very clear, okay? And believe me, if there's any amendment to the Constitution that employees of the National Security Agency are familiar with, it's the Fourth, right? And it is a reasonableness standard in the Fourth Amendment.
To quote the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States in its entirety, the one the general and the NSA folks are so familiar with and know is about reasonableness and not about probable cause, quote, "The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, no warrant shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized." Well, maybe they have a different constitution over there at the NSA.
Yeah, that was taken from Keith Olbermann's show back in 2007. But it illustrates a couple of things. First of all, the sheer gall of somebody like Michael Hayden, and also his attempts to cover up his own crimes. This was before the FISA Amendment Act was passed, which was an attempt to exonerate the Bush administration, including Hayden and Cheney and his whole office, Addington. I could go name a few more, all of them guilty of taking Americans' information in bulk with no warrants. What's your thoughts? I know you've got plenty on this subject, but I want to get in before, I want to get the second half of the hour. I want to get to the Patriot Act. But I think if you talk to this is pure corruption, and now Hayden is working for what would we call a counter-terror organization, making millions of dollars. And he's out there still lying on television on a regular basis, and no prosecution, but the whistleblowers get prosecuted.
Well, Doug, that clip you played is a classic for all time. And I'm so glad that you played it, because it shows you what we're dealing with, the absurdity. And corruption is exactly right. There are forces in control of the United States government that they almost lurk in the background, but they have something to do. They all have something to do with huge amounts of money. I think Eisenhower probably captured it best when he warned us on the evening of, it was either January 16th or 17th of 1961, in the first national TV farewell address by a sitting president, he warned us vividly about something called the industrial complex, the military-industrial complex, warning us that it threatened, because of its ability to influence government, it threatened our way of government, our way of life. It just very starkly warning the American people. And I urge people to Google that. There's a 3-minute segment that presents just that piece of his farewell address. And it's just is shocking to see in the context of what we're all seeing today. His military industrial complex has now expanded to become the military industrial intelligence complex because of all the money in the intelligence business surrounding all of this mass surveillance. So, yes, Hayden, excuse me, I've got some allergies, so I've got to clear the pipes once in a while. But Hayden, almost in a sociopathic sense, reacts to the 9/11 as an opportunity to bring together business interests, Congress. They all sit down as a good boy, good gal network and figure out ways to throw money at the problem. And boy, have they thrown the money. And look at the results we've had. Questionable, highly questionable. In fact, they can't name any successes prevented by some of these programs. And so why are we spending billions to do them? Well, we know what that is. It's to keep business afloat, and business then donates to political campaigns, and we have this vicious cycle that's very hard to penetrate. And by the way, Hayden now works for the Chertoff Group in Washington, D.C. He gets $50,000 fees for speeches, Michael Hayden does. I don't know exactly what the Chertoff Group thinks it does. It probably talks to people and charges them gross amounts of money, telling them that they have wisdom to impart. And you'll remember Michael Chertoff was one of the first heads of the Department of Homeland Security. So this is what we see in terms of the complex, the military-industrial complex, is people coming out of government jobs, forming companies, and then contracting out to government and reaping huge sums of money and salaries. The American people, one day, I hope, will do something about that. But today, they seem to be very tolerant of those expenditures, Doug.
Well, they've been propagandized and whipped, and we have over the last few days, actually the last couple of weeks, this ongoing debate about two choices, the USA Freedom Act or reauthorizing the Patriot Act, two horrible pieces of legislation, in my opinion. And we're taught to be afraid. I had a couple of quotes here. Here's the one by, I think yesterday, by President Obama. And he said, "This," and he's talking about the sunsetting of the Patriot Act. He says, "This is not an issue where we have to choose between security and civil liberties. This is an issue in which we, in fact, have struck the right balance and shaped a piece of legislation that everybody can support. So let's go and get it done," end of quote from President Obama. We've struck the right balance, which appears he's supposed to be a constitutional scholar. From what I've seen, he doesn't seem to have much respect for the Constitution. But it brings us to the question of the Patriot Act. And what's been going on? Part of what you left out, and Thomas Drake pointed out when I interviewed him, I think it was about a year ago, we actually had, the NSA had the information on the hijackers. They had the connections. We could have had, and they could have pursued that and possibly stopped the events of 9/11. And then we look at Hayden in the run-up to that, not looking, almost a concerted effort by the FBI and the CIA and the Bush administration, not looking at anti-terrorism, not looking at the leads they had, not communicating. And then we see this buildup of what Bush, I think it was 2007 State of the Union address, he said he bragged on creating the private army. So you put all of that together, and along with the Patriot Act forced through under duress of Congress in, I think it was October of 2001, and it paints a picture of a pretty draconian, Orwellian world that we're living in. And so I'd like to get your opinions about the Patriot Act and where we're going to go from here. What do you see as happening? Of course, it could be prevented from sunsetting, of course, by the Senate's, I guess, voting tomorrow. They're going to have a session on Sunday, and it would sunset on Monday.
Well, that's right, and you're right about Drake's revelations. And just so the people understand, Tom Drake, although we knew Tom when we retired, we retired on Halloween Day 2001 in disgust at what the agency was doing. We had just found out they had turned the apparatus against Americans. It was shocking, and we were getting nowhere in terms of our solutions being respected and adopted and expanded. And by the way, a key characteristic of our solution was to protect innocent people. You know, when you dip into the internet or any large telecommunications, pipe, fiber optic, cable, whatever, there's a lot of data and a lot of personal data flying down that pipe because of the way the system works. It knows who's talking to whom, where the points of the ending points, the begin points and end points of the communication are going. Telecommunications has to understand all that in order to get you to the person you want to communicate with, no matter whether it's Twitter or a telephone call or an email or a credit card transaction that you swipe at a gas station. It's got to go into a database. They got to know whose account to charge for the $25 worth of gas you just bought. So everything in telecommunications is an accounting system so that it works. And it also lists your name oftentimes in some record, and a date and a time. So it records everything. It's like being wired to an EKG or something. It really keeps tabs of what you're doing if someone actually wants to timeline or review all of those kinds of electronic interfaces that a human being has, including now medicine. Your medical records are all being put into electronic databases. So the government is harvesting not only data via NSA, but through HHS and other mechanisms that if you put it all together, Doug, you've got a person, you've got more knowledge about a person than probably their own wife, their own brother, their own sister. Or what. It's just amazing the cataloging they can do with this kind of power. So we are shocked about this and we leave. Drake, however, continues to stay with the NSA because he's not eligible to retire. And so it's he plays around with the capability we had, finds a little money that Diane Rourke, who lives in Oregon now, near her parents. She was a senior staffer for the House Permanent Select Subcommittee on Intelligence. She saw what we were doing. She became a believer and tried to get Congress to fund what we were doing against Hayden's wishes, and that created friction. Well, anyway, we get out. Tom Drake stays. He uses the capability to look at NSA databases. He had to modify the capability a bit, but he finds data all about 9/11, just to bring your audience up to date, that if shared would have prevented 9/11. Prevented it. NSA had the data already before any Patriot Act, before any FISA Amendment Act, before any USA Freedom Act. They had it. The system worked. They just couldn't put the pieces together. Now, Drake also says, not only were there pieces, but there was an organization that had connected those dots already, but didn't share the information. Why? You'll have to ask Mike Hayden. That is the question of the century. If NSA had the data, why didn't you share it? I think there was another agenda. It's called, how do you exploit a catastrophe to get what you want? And that was to get access to everyone's data, use it as the reason to collect everything about everybody, because law enforcement was part of this argument, not just NSA. NSA has always had authority to get all the data it wants on foreign targets. It's turning it against Americans that's different and dangerous. If you quote Senator Frank Church from the 1970s, when they found out the NSA for 30 years had been monitoring Americans, he said, my God, this could be become a tyrannical tool to support a tyrannical government. So all of the things we're saying that people are poo-pooing today, like Mitch McConnell or Senator Burr and others, my God, they're fellow senators said them 30 years ago, 40 years ago. What's changed? Ethics. What? What has changed? The Constitution certainly didn't change.
Kirk,
so why do we have a Congress so concerned 35 years ago when there was no digital age, when there weren't all of these smartphones and ways to communicate and tweet and Twitter and all this stuff, and they were so worried, yet a Congress who exists today in an age when our homes are filled with electronic communications devices that are even portable now.
Hey, Kirk, we have a caller on the line. I want to call him. He's been waiting about 5 minutes, and I want to bring him on the air.
Bring him.
Okay. Mauro, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, 9/11 is an inside job. The only way to prevent 9/11 would have been to arrest Cheney and Bush, Rumsfeld, Horowitz, all those guys, the new American century, well before it occurred, because it was an inside job. Our private armies are paid for by us. We didn't ask for that. This is to protect them. We are already in a police state, and people better wake up and do something. Don't pay your taxes. It's time for our revolution. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mauro. You want to respond to that?
Yeah, there was a time when I would have hung up on a guy like Mauro, but no longer. I've seen too much proven to be true that has changed my faith in the way this country works and is controlled. And so I think there's at least a modicum of truth to what Mauro says. Now, do I think the U.S. government literally orchestrated 9/11? No, it was too. That would have been the best acting job in the history of the world. I do think there is something called radical Islam, and it doesn't like us. And, gee, there's some things about us I don't like either. Corruption is one of them. And so they attack us. We had the data. Why didn't NSA share it? So is there more truth to what Mauro is saying than meets the eye? You have to keep an open mind in these things.
And I think most people would agree that 9/11 was never fully investigated, where, people, just a blind eye was turned to the failures of the Bush administration in general.
Yeah.
And purposely with we know there was tons of political pressure bought and brought against people, cutting of funding, and basically a controlled mandate by that 9/11 commission to not go there. So there's plenty of room for a conspiracy. Actually, there is I don't know if you've read James Risen's new book, Pay Any Price, but there's a whole last chapter is dedicated to you and your fellow whistleblowers and what happened there. Let me read this. I'll read part of this from James Risen's book, but he writes about your fellow whistleblower, Diane Rourke. And increasingly depressed, she realized that she was fighting the entire Washington power structure. She had gone to all three branches of government, Congress, the White House, and the courts, and had discovered that there was a conspiracy of silence among the nation's most powerful public officials to protect an unconstitutional operation. It was very clear to me that, and this is all the quote, going on. This is quoting Diana Rourke. It was very clear to me that there were all these people who had signed over their lives and that they had pledged not to talk about it, end quote. Which, if that's a conspiracy, but let me just put a finer edge on that. What this means is that George Bush, General Michael Hayden, Dick Cheney, Nancy Pelosi, Peter Goss, the head of the FISA courts, Kohler Catelli, and a few insiders, mostly neocons, which Mauro brought up the Project for a New American Century, this is all part of their plan, and their policies are still in place. And so when questioned by Diane Rourke in her account, when she questioned Hayden, and he responded with, quote, when she asked why they took the protections off for American people, he answered, quote, we had the power. Michael Hayden. We had him and all these, a couple handful of people that didn't really give a damn about the Constitution of the people of the United States. So I think Morrow's comment is really well-founded. And from what we know, you know, Risen was threatened. Now he's been threatened for many years over the Jeffrey Sterling CIA leak case, which also used evidence, secret evidence, gotten illegally through the NSA to convict Sterling. Now he's serving 3.5 years. So your thoughts on that?
No, it's true, and what Mauro said in that regard is absolutely spot on, and I think the solution is also spot on. We have to have some kind of a revolution, hopefully not bloody, but you know, even the founder said every once in a while the tree of liberty has to be fed with the blood of patriots. And tyranny, people who believe in tyranny. So it's a constant battle. But yes, I you know, it bothered me a lot when I heard about 40 or so Saudis getting on an airplane the day after 9/11 and flying out of a country suddenly, and no one could ever connect those dots. So I am sure somewhere lurking in the background are money interests, political interests, how to exploit a catastrophe. To give the government more control is certainly a part of the equation, and it's frightening. And we've begun to look more like a police state than a constitutional republic. I see thuggery going on, the mishandling of otherwise innocent people that used to have due process, and now we're throwing them on the ground. We're hitting. We're shooting when a taser might work. It's frightening to see. We're giving the police forces surplus military equipment. We're allowing the FBI and local police even to grab cell phones, download the data off of them just because they can, even though you were stopped for a speeding violation. These are all dangerous signs reminiscent of the brown shirts, the Gestapo, the Secret Service, SS under Hitler and the Stasi of East Germany. These are red flags, and you look at the treatment of whistleblowers, we're ignored. You just mentioned Jeffrey Sterling. Do you know he was convicted based on a claim under the Espionage Act, and the conviction was based on metadata, the stuff everyone is saying is harmless. Let me tell you. Metadata is more dangerous than content as a rule over time. It is more dangerous to revealing a person's activities, but it's never evidence of criminality. My God, even Osama bin Laden may have enjoyed a pizza and called the pizza boy. That doesn't mean the phone call to the pizza boy makes the pizza boy a terrorist. And so if we ever lose, and we're already losing it, our right to due process under the Constitution, the police state, the emerging, the ascending police state, describe it any way you want to, will control our lives.
And let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today, Kirk Wiebe, NSA whistleblower and truth-teller. We're discussing NSA overreach and illegal spying around the world, including the Patriot Act and what's going on in America today. If you'd like to call in and give us your questions or your comments, our number here is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. I'll be taking calls for probably another 8 to 10 minutes, so this is your chance to call in and ask Kirk Wiebe, NSA insider, anything you'd like to know that he's able to reveal, I'm sure. That's another point, Kirk, is it takes a lot of courage to do what you and Thomas Drake and William Binney and Diane Rorick and all of you that have tried and tried to get the message out and people still don't believe it, and you have the president and, you know, people in Congress. Just be afraid, be very afraid. And I never trust anybody that tells me to be afraid. And I'm more afraid of my government now than I am of any terrorists in the world, quite honestly. So who's going to protect us, and what do you think our chances are? Will getting rid of the Patriot Act actually help our situation? A lot of people don't think so.
No, it's not, and it's actually more evidence, Doug, unfortunately, of the game that's being played. I hate to say that, but there's no sincerity. I mean, I can't read what's in the hearts of every congressman and senator. I think some of them are bamboozled, confused. When NSA talks to them, they talk about what they're doing in techno-speak, and they use techno-speak to confuse people who really had known nothing of information technology. And we know that they lie. We know what Sensenbrenner's, one of the authors of Patriot, what his intent was, and it was never to do bulk collection against everyone. It was to go after people based on, if not probable cause, certainly reasonable suspicion. And, my God, they can't tell us that all these millions of Americans or even people on the earth are all possibly criminals. But that's the mentality they have. So when they first created the Patriot Act, just the name itself garners a feeling of patriotism and its psychological operations to get all of us to feel comfortable with what they're doing. When in fact many didn't even read the Patriot Act, they certainly didn't understand it. So that's all hoopla. It's all salesmanship designed to make us feel good, but the devil's truly in the details. As we know, now they're offering USA freedom as some way. Well, let's look at it. First of all, we don't have a real Article 3 court with a jury or anything like it. In terms of a FISA court. FISA court is secret. It operates secretly. We're not privy to watch it, see it, understand. So to me, that's not a democratic approach to delivering a judiciary to the people that is honest and fair. So there's the other view's never there. Let's put it that way. The other thing is, they're saying, well, we're going to leave the data with the telephone companies. Any IT person knows where the data is, doesn't make a difference. The NSA can still get it. And it can still use force to get it. It could even hack in to their databases and get it. So there's multiple ways it can get the data. But the dirtiest little secret is that USA Freedom says we're going to constrain NSA. What they don't say is NSA has other legal authorities that are not even mentioned in the USA Freedom Act, specifically Executive Order 12333, which gives NSA the authority to collect just about anything it wants to for a period of time. Its intent was to say things can happen so rapidly in discovery of a threat that NSA needs some leeway to operate in a situation where lives and property, destruction of lives and property are at stake, so that they're relieved from the immediate need of saying, whoops, can't do anything about that, have to go to a court first. So that authority has been there all the time, Doug. It's already had it. It never needed a Patriot Act. I think the primary pusher for this mass surveillance has been law enforcement. Remember, it was King George III of England who wanted to put a soldier in every colonial home to keep tabs on what these troublesome colonists were doing and what they were saying and so forth. Today's digital monitoring is the equivalent. In fact, I would tell you it's a greater threat than King George putting a soldier in every colonial home. And we fought a revolution over that. And people need to do the same now. Do something. Get up, make a phone call, complain, call a congressman. Take that couple of minutes to go online. It's easy to find their phone number. Using your zip code, they'll even tell you how to what number to call in Washington. Please take the time, voice your concern, voice your objection to bulk mass surveillance.
And do you have a website that people could go to, you along with the rest of the whistleblowers? I know that you're kind of working together. Is there a website?
There are actually two. I do not own them. I'm just part of two organizations that are trying to get people to stand up for truth. If we could just do that much, demand truth, that would do so much to change the atmosphere in Washington, because right now no one is seeing that the public cares about truth. And just think about it. A simple thing like truth, if we had it, if we all could expect it 80% of the time, how much better our organizations, our ability to get along. We wouldn't spend endless hours bickering over talking points that all have political agendas. We could actually get along as human beings. Just imagine that concept for a moment. And so one of the organization's websites is called exposefacts.org. Exposefacts.org. And the other one is the Institute for Public Accuracy. Institute for Public Accuracy. Both of these are downtown Washington, D.C., and they're connected. And they're connected to Roots Action. You may have heard of Roots Action. So if it sounds like we're trying to connect some dots in the activism arena, and I say that in a positive way, because it's all about truth, it's all about joining forces, and not just within the United States, Doug, but internationally. In fact, Stand Up for Truth has become the motto for a concerted effort to link organizations across borders, headed up by Norman Solomon, who is taking some whistleblowers, including Tom Drake, to visit four European capitals here during the first week of June to spread this message. We've been working for almost a year now to connect with other groups. It's not to control them. It's to literally join forces, exchange information, host data on websites. They're in Germany. They're in Sweden. They're in Norway. There's even one in Africa now. And so we expect to grow this organization slowly over time so that people can be something, part of something that demands truth, especially from those who claim the authority to control us.
Let me, we've only got, I'd say, about 3 minutes, and I wanted to play a little excerpt from the Edward Snowden interview because I think it talks so much to what we're talking about. And let me play this, and then we'll come back, and you'll have a couple minutes to kind of wind it up. And so here's Edward Snowden. I call this clip The Greatest Fear, Turnkey Tyranny. Oops, hold on a second.
Agencies.
I'm gonna start
and
I'm going to start that over.
You can't come forward against the world's most powerful intelligence agencies and be completely free from risk because they're such powerful adversaries that, no one can meaningfully oppose them. If they want to get you, they'll get you in time. But at the same time, you have to make a determination about what it is that's important to you. And if living living unfreely but comfortably is something you're willing to accept, and I think many of us are, it's the human nature. You can get up every day, you can go to work, you can collect your large paycheck for relatively little work against the public interest and go to sleep at night after watching your shows. But if you realize that that's the world that you helped create, and it's going to get worse with the next generation and the next generation who extend the capabilities of this sort of architecture of oppression, you realize that you might be willing to accept any risk, and it doesn't matter what the outcome is, so long as the public gets to make their own decisions about how that's applied.
Why should people care about surveillance?
Because even if you're not doing anything wrong, you're being watched and recorded, and the storage capability of these systems increases every year consistently by orders of magnitude, to where it's getting to the point you don't have to have done anything wrong. You simply have to eventually fall under suspicion from somebody, even by a wrong call, and then they can use the system to go back in time and scrutinize every decision you've ever made, every friend you've ever discussed something with, and attack you on that basis to sort of derive suspicion from an innocent life and paint anyone in the context of a wrongdoer.
Well, got about a minute here, Kirk. I'm going to let you finish it up, and you'll hear some music come on, and that's our cue to sign off.
All righty. Well, Snowden's words are golden. Please, everyone, take them to heart. By the way, I forgot to tell you the website for the Institute for Public Accuracy. It is accuracy.org. Accuracy.org. And if they go there right now, there you will see a wonderful article by Marcy Wheeler about the fallacies of Patriot Act compromises. That's just one example. And they'll see articles and photos of other whistleblowers, including Daniel Ellsberg. So those are the two sites I recommend. But I would leave your audience with a couple of thoughts. First, take Snowden's words to heart. Take Mr. Morrow's words to heart that we need a revolution, and that revolution can begin immediately with a phone call to your senator and or representative. Please do it. And finally, no nation, I think it was Franklin, I may be attributing it wrong, but no nation that believes in truly believes in liberty can prevail if its manners are corrupt. Fight corruption. Stand up for truth. Don't look the other way. Take action on something principled that we can all abide by.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, Kirk. I want to thank you very much for being on Unspun and Experiment in Truth Telling with us today.
My pleasure, Doug. I enjoyed it.
All right. We'll talk to you again, hopefully.
Yes, sir. Anytime.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Well, I want to thank Kirk Wiebe on the air once again, courageous NSA whistleblower, for being with us. And you've been listening to Unspun and Experiment of Truth Telling. You can get the archives of this show at kkrn.org. I will put links to the sites that Kirk gave to us, and I'm with him. I think we need to get off the couch and get active here in America, reclaim democracy.